Daniel Tammet has an extraordinary mind. In his head, he can do mathematical calculations into the millions and recite pi to more than 22,000 digits. He can learn a foreign language in just a few weeks. But Tammet has trouble with some of the most basic human interactions, like looking another person in the eye or laughing at a joke. He is an autistic savant, like the Dustin Hoffman character in the movie Rain Man. But unlike most savants, Tammet has a remarkable ability to describe his own inner experience, which he's done in a memoir called Born on a Blue Day. Anne Strange Champs talked with Tammet about his life and his remarkable gift with numbers.
Will you try to give us a picture of what your world of numbers looks like?
Well, every number to me is beautiful. Every number has its own shape, its own color, its own texture. 37, to give an example, is a lumpy number, lumpy like oatmeal. 89 is soft and flowing like snow. A number like 111 would be very bright and shining. When I look at a very long series of numbers like pi, for example, a number that starts 3.141592, this number that is used in measuring circles and goes on forever. I hold the European record for reciting this number from memory.
Didn't you do it to something like 22,000 places?
Absolutely, over 22,500 decimal places. It took over 5 hours from start to finish.
That's just extraordinary.
And Oxford University brought in mathematicians to check the recitation, and it was absolutely correct from start to finish.
So when you look at pi, or when you recited pi and see it in your mind, what do you see?
Well, for a number of that size, what I'm doing is I'm pulling all of the colors and shapes and textures that I see in the individual numbers together, and the result is a kind of visual landscape, a numberscape in my mind's eye. It's full of color, texture. It's beautiful. It's like a second country. A country of the mind. And it's a place that I can go to and feel calm. And in fact, when I was reciting the number pi, it was at a museum in Oxford. It was a public event. People came, and some of them burst into tears. There were journalists there who asked them afterwards, "Why did you do this?" And they said it was like listening to someone reciting sacred scripture. It was such a flowing, meditative experience to listen to these numbers that are fundamental.
Would you be willing to recite some of pi for us now?
Sure. 3.141592653589793238462643384. 338. And it just goes on and on.
I can understand that seeing somebody whose mind can do something that's so far beyond the abilities of most people's minds would make people cry, make people marvel. Your mind has also been very studied. You've worked with a lot of scientists. Have you and they come to any conclusions about why you have such extraordinary abilities?
Well, I've been studied by scientists in America and in Britain. My ability to articulate my experience, what it's like to be me inside my head, is unusual. For a long time as a child, I didn't speak at all. And one of the reasons I did that was because silence was a beautiful thing for me. It was a kind of silvery texture around my head, like condensation running down a window pane. And when someone made a loud noise, a knock at the door, a car horn blaring in the street below, it would be like a shattering of that experience, a physically painful experience. Scientists, I think, looking at my case, who have studied me, are interested in the detail that I'm able to give them, why it is maybe that autistic people are so sensitive to outside noises, for example, and why we love numbers so much, because of the patterns, because of the relationships that numbers have between them. They're regular, they're fixed in a world that's full of chaos.
So do you use numbers all the time in your daily life as a way to cope with the anxiety and chaos of daily life?
Absolutely. I count quite a lot. I count to myself over and over. When I was a child as well, in particular, it was very difficult. One of the downsides to having an autistic spectrum disorder is that you find it very difficult to relate to other people, to do things that most people take for granted, like knowing how to read body language, mm-hmm. how to maintain eye contact, when to laugh at a joke. Things like this I've had to teach myself. And so children in the playground have a real instinct, unfortunately, for knowing when other children are different from them, mm-hmm. when to pull back from those children. I was one of those children that was pulled back from and didn't have any friends for a long time at school. I was bullied and teased by my classmates who didn't understand why I was so different from them. One of the things that I would do then, because ironically I didn't understand what the protocol was, so to speak, for when you're being bullied, I didn't know what the normal human reaction would be. So I would go back to numbers. That was my reference point always. I would go back to numbers. I would put my fingers in my ears. I would sit on the playground floor and I would count to myself very, very quickly in powers of two. So 2, 4, 8, 16, 32, 64, 1, 2, 8, 2, 5, 6, 5, 12, 1, 0, 2, 4, 2, 0, 4, 8, 4, 0, 9, 6, 8, 1, 9, 2, 1, 6, 2, 8, 4, 3, 2, 7, 6, 8, 6, 5, 5, 3, 6, 1, 3, 1, 0, 7, 2, 2, 6, 2, 1, 4, 4, 5, 2, 4, 2, 8, 8, 1, 0, 4, 8, 5, 7, 6, 2, 0, 9, 7, 1, 5, 2. And I would go on and on and on into the millions. And the numbers would form patterns in my mind, visual colours and patterns, shapes and textures. It would just be a beautiful experience. And I would be pulled back into that country of the mind, that place of landscapes filled with numbers. And the children would disappear. I would not have known that they existed. And the children themselves, how could they know what to react in that sort of situation? So they were kind of perplexed and just walked away. How could they bully someone who didn't know how to be bullied?
On the one hand, it's wonderful that you had that world you could go to. I mean, there are children who are bullied who don't have a world of numbers to go to in their minds. And on the other hand, it sounds so incredibly lonely.
It was extremely lonely. That was, I think, the hardest thing for me growing up. As a young child, loneliness actually wasn't a problem for a while because I was so insular, so caught up in my own world, that I had no sense of other people and of other people as having thoughts and feelings and emotions as I had. They were really just like wallpaper, the background to my whole world. And then gradually, around the age of 8 or 9, I started to experience an emotion, a real pain inside myself. It was kind of like a hurting. And it didn't go away, no matter how hard I tried to make it. And I couldn't find a word for it. I didn't know what the word for this emotion was for a long time. And then I realized subsequently it's what people call loneliness. And I would, in my home at night, sit up in bed looking up at the ceiling and thinking what it might be like, trying to imagine what it would be like to have a friend, because I had no idea. And the turning point came once I'd finished school, because at that point I had done very well academically, but I still was lacking something, and it was a sense of who I was, a sense of self. I read somewhere that travelling was what people do sometimes to find themselves, and I wanted to find who I was. So when an advert came along in my local newspaper to take part in a volunteering opportunity in another country, I applied. And I passed the interviews. They were looking for people who came from different backgrounds, people who would otherwise not have the opportunity to travel. And so I was accepted and taken to Lithuania, which is a small country in Eastern Europe. One of my other gifts, apart from numbers, is languages. And I was able to learn Lithuanian very, very quickly whilst I was there.
Well, how long did it take you to learn Lithuanian?
A matter of weeks.
Weeks?
Weeks.
To complete fluency?
Well, I will give an example. I, at one point, was walking home from work, and a Lithuanian man came up to me and asked directions, in Lithuanian, of course. And I have a very poor sense of direction. It's one of the difficulties that I have. I find it difficult even to tell left from right. And so I just very apologetically and politely explained to him in Lithuanian that I couldn't help him. I didn't know where this particular place was. And instead of understanding this, you know, perhaps from my accent or something, he assumed I was Lithuanian and kept asking me over and over again until I said to him in Lithuanian, "Atsiprašau, excuse me, bet aš nesu Lietuvis, I'm not Lithuanian. Aš esu iš Anglijos, I'm from England."
And his eyes went so wide in his face that he couldn't believe an Englishman was speaking to him in his own language. And he apologized and walked off. But Lithuania was wonderful because I met people who, for the first time, looked beyond the things that made me different to them and saw the things that were the same.
Have you ever met anyone who came very close to really understanding and being like you?
In terms of meeting other savants, there are about 50 in the world, so it's very, very difficult to meet another savant. But there was a documentary film, filmed actually across the US mostly in 2004, called Brain Man. And in one particular segment of the program, I had the opportunity to meet Kim Peake. And Kim is, I should say, the original Rain Man. He is the person who the Dustin Hoffman character in the movie Rain Man was based on. And I had the opportunity to meet with him in a library full of books, because he loves books, I love books as well. And we connected immediately. And it was the most amazing experience. I hadn't ever had quite that sort of electricity when I meet people. And Kim was so friendly. He held my hand very tight and showed me all around the library that he goes to every day with his father, Fran. And he reads books, and he's able to remember all of the facts and all of the figures that he reads. He's read thousands of books. And he has the most amazing mind. But what's more amazing to me is his heart, is his soul, because what he does with his father is he goes all across America and he shares a story with them. And the story is that disability needn't be so different that it's disabling, that you can be different and you can be proud in being different. There's nothing wrong, autistic or not, in being who you are. And that was a message I really took away from that meeting. It meant a huge amount to me. And I think for the first time I realized that normality wasn't the most important thing anymore, wasn't the goal that I should be aiming all of my energies at. I have a gift, I have several gifts, numbers, but also languages as well. And I should be proud of those. They're blessings from God. And I think actually it's the challenge of each person's life, autistic or not, that we each try to find what it is that's unique about us, our own gifts. And once we have that, to have the courage to live that uniqueness out. And if we can do that, then I think we can be happy.
Daniel Tammet. He talked with Anne Strainchamps about his memoir, Born on a Blue Day. Tammet lives in Southeast England and raises money for charities to help people with neurological disorders.